Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next couple hours, you're kind of stuck with me. Nevertheless, if you'd like to join us, you can. Now's the time, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Here's what we want to try to do. We want to try to have a conversation, so that conversation starts off with, tell me what you got. Tell me the year and the make and the model and the mileage. Okay? Tell me what the symptoms are. Tell me when they happen. And I'll help you with that because I'm going to ask you questions. Does it always vibrate? When doesn't it vibrate? When it stops and dies, is it cold or is it hot? Is it first thing in the morning? Is it after being on the freeway for a long time? Those are the kinds of give and take that we need to have in order to, for me to guide you the best I can. 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa. That family's been around since the late 60s in repairing car and selling gasoline. But Thompson's on Main Street just east of Stapley, Brian and Thelma have come from those gas station families, Thompson and Vivian. Those of you in Mesa will recognize those two names because they were big dogs back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Nevertheless, Thompson's knows the difference between right and wrong. They're a good shop, and they're going to take good care of you and not take advantage of you. They've always done that. And if I've had a compliment about Brian and Thelma, I've had 10 of them. So if you're in Mesa, it's the only shop I recommend, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Okay, 602-508-0960. I'm going to tell you a quick story. I'm a pretty good storyteller, they say. Half of it you can believe and half of you can't. So a lady inadvertently puts gas in her diesel. She takes it to a dealer. I'm not going to mention who it is or even what part of Arizona it is, but it's not Phoenix. Takes it to a dealer, and they have it for somewhere around 3 weeks and can't figure it out. So she takes the car back. It continues to run rough, and it's getting worse, so she takes it back. Now, at this particular point, the shop calls her and says, your fuel tank's full of dirt, and they have a picture of a fuel filter. So at that particular point, she reports it to her insurance company, and her insurance company says, we don't cover dirt. So she calls the shop and says, you know, my insurance company doesn't cover dirt, so, you know, how much is it going to cost me? In the interim, the dealership calls her back and says, you know what? It's got dirt and water. See if they cover water. And then she finds out, no, they don't. So then the dealer says, it has gas because we can actually take the fuel out of the tank and put it on the ground and light it on fire. Well, that's true. If it lights on fire, it's got gas. If it doesn't light on fire, it's diesel only. And I look at the picture of the filter, by the way, and it looks pretty normal to me. Hadn't been changed in a while, but looks pretty normal. And the fact is, the truck would run down the road real fast, and it was a 2014 Eco diesel from Dodge. It's a 1500 four-wheel drive, and it's driven by a 79-year-old rancher lady who's tough as nails. She'd probably whip half my friends, and me too. So anyway, now they hit the bingo. The dealer says, oh, gasoline? Yeah, we'll take care of that. So the insurance company sends an investigator to grab a sample of fuel, and they test it for dirt, and the lab says, no dirt. Then they test it for water, and the lab says, no water. They test it for gasoline. Oh, and by the way, on the first estimate, that the estimate was 11,000 plus, and that's on the dirt. And then the second estimate, which was water, that's 11,000 plus. And then the third one, when it's gas, that's 11,000 plus. And we haven't changed the number. So about this time, they call me and they said, can you run interference for us? And I said, I can just explain what they're saying. So then the insurance calls and says, why are we at 11,000? And he goes, well, that's what happens when you have a gas contamination. And I'm going to use that word a lot, contamination. So they said, oh, yeah, we have to replace everything. Everything from the fuel pump in the tank, everything forward, all the lines, the high-pressure pump on the diesel, all the lines to the injectors and the injectors, and after we do all that $11,000 work, it might need an engine. Whew. So now all of a sudden we're in this gas contamination. So they take another sample, and they send it to the lab, and the lab says it's got 30% gas in it. Well, Dodge has a document that says here's seven steps for a gas contamination in one of our diesels. And I'm going to estimate to you that it's between $600 and $1,200, and I'm being wide open. Wide open. You got to flush the tank. You got to replace all the filters. You got to open some of the lines and bleed the diesel out and shove the gasoline out, blah, blah, blah. So we got a $600 to $1,200 gasoline. So then they call back and they go, oh, no, it's a DEF contamination. Now, DEF is a diesel exhaust fluid, and this stuff is caustic. It eats metal like you eat mashed potatoes. It's unbelievably destructive. On a Ford, if you put diesel or if you put DEF in the fuel tank of your diesel, the bill's going to be $20,000 to $24,000, and Ford has a kit of everything that needs to be replaced, and your insurance company will probably cover that as well. So now we have a DEF contamination, and in reality, that matches the $11,000. But keep in mind, we had the $11,000 on dirt. We had the $11,000 on water. We had the $11,000 on gas. And now we got $11,000 on DEF. We send another investigator there. He grabs the fuel and he comes back and gives it to the lab. The lab says there's no DEF. All that's got in is gasoline. And the dealer says, we don't care what you say. We don't believe your lab report. And then they start working on the car. Now, they say that the lady gave them authorization. She denies that. Then they say the insurance company gave him authorization, and the insurance company said, no, we didn't, and that she doesn't have the authority to spend our money, and we did not give you. So they take the thing apart, and then I say, we need to just get it out of there. So we go down to get the vehicle, and guess how much the bill is? It's half a part now. It's half a part, $6,100, which is ironically about half of the $11,000. And so we get the car off. We tow it to Payson Chapman. It's the Dodge dealer. He puts the car back together without $4,000 worth of parts that they sold the lady, and for $2,200. So they put all the old injectors in. They put all the old lines, because all we got is a gas contamination. They flushed the tank, put diesel fuel in it, did a fuel filter. Boom, we're done. 2,200 miles. So now we've got all of this to just go through. And I'm not making any of these decisions because I'm not powerful enough to make the decisions, but I did write my report, and I thought it was unusual that first it's dirt, then it's water, then it's gas, then it's a DEF, and they don't believe what they believed the first three lab tests, but not the last one. The definition of fraud is when you do something that's not necessarily the case, not necessarily the truth, because it's going to butter your bread or put money in your pocket. You're going to lie about something that isn't there or isn't needed or whatever so that you make more money or you get more money. That's what fraud's all about. I'm not a cop. I don't have to deal with that. All I can tell you is if you have a fuel contamination problem, you better get it right. And they better, and you get them to write it down and send you an email, because on water, and first of all, there's no dirt, because here's the problem. The diesel in every other car on the road has a very sophisticated filter. It's not going to let dirt go through the filter, whether it's gas or diesel. The worst that's going to happen is we're going to plug the filter. That's it. It's stupid to think that you're going to have dirt that's been shoveled in a fuel tank go forward. All it's going to do is kill the engine because it plugs the filter. So, and water is a problem. Just suck the water out of the tank, put some new fuel in there, and move on. As far as gasoline is concerned in your diesel, like I said, that's $600 to $1,200. And then if you got DEF, depending on year, make, and model, you're in the vicinity of $10,000 to $24,000, because everything that fuel touches has to be replaced. That's from the injector tips all the way back to the electronic fuel pump in the tank. So it's an ugly situation, but the message here is, just look what happened in this 79-year-old lady that runs a ranch. Her husband just died. She's as tough as nails. She can probably outride and outrope most of the guys I know. She's in the middle of all this. She doesn't know what to do. Her insurance company is a good company. I pick and choose who I work for. So this was one I was happy to look into on their behalf. And this is what they say to me. They say, just tell us the truth. If we need to pay this, we'll pay it. If we don't need to pay it, or if you think that it's really A and it's not B, or should we pay for it? Is this the right repair? Is this the right symptoms? Is this what's really going on? And all those answers is this is just a ripoff. That's all it is. It's just a ripoff. For whatever reason, these guys are hungry. For whatever reason, and here's the kicker. They ordered a bunch of parts, and then they made her buy them, even though they're brand new in the box. That's the offset for $4,000 on their $6,100 bill. So the very first thing, I understand there's lawyers involved, is going to say, give us $4,000 back, here's your brand new parts. At that point, we're going to continue this because you did something stupid. Anyway, that's a day in my life of being an automotive expert and having to deal. Now, there have been times where I say to the insurance company, this is a valid claim. There's nothing to suggest otherwise. You can overrule me because I don't care. But after I've looked at all the evidence, talked to all the people, you're wrong, they're right. That it happens 35 to 40% of the time. I say to them, I'd rather be on the other side. And they don't like me to say that, but
1 minute.
Tough. All right, we got a caller. Who have we got?
We have Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
This is a transmission service question.
Okay.
On a 2014 GMC Sierra with a 5.3-liter gas engine. I'm the original owner. It has 82,000 miles. And the owner manual says, change fluid, filter if serviceable, every 45,000 miles. So at 43,000, I had it flushed. You know, I had the cooler line taken off and then flushed and all new fluid put in. And then at 46,000, I had the pan dropped and replaced the filter and then put in the 5 quarts. So now I'm at 82,000. And I'm thinking, what if I get one of those extractors and just pull out like 4 or 5 quarts out of the dipstick and then just keep doing that like every 20,000 miles?
Okay,
I won't have to have the pan dropped and all that stuff.
Well, first of all, I think you did this all wrong. I would have done the pan at 40, and then I would have done the flush and I would not have done the pan. I'd have done the flush at 80. And I think you sucking out 4 or 5 quarts of transmission fluid is just a waste of your time and a waste of your money. I think if you're going to change this oil at 20,000 and you think your transmission is going to love you and last forever, I think that might be a bad idea. If the transmission doesn't know, and frankly, most of them die of old age as opposed to the fluid being burnt, but those are usually transmissions that have been abused. So you abuse it, you cook the fluid, it's brown, you can smell it, it's bad, you can smell it, it's burnt. But in your particular case, you've already done what on a $40,000 call on the tranny service, you pull the pan first, do the filter, and you're looking at what the byproducts are in the pan. You better not find any snap rings. You'll find a little black mound of clutch material. You might find some metal shavings as the transmission kind of wore itself in. But for you to do a flush, then turn around and do a filter and a gasket, that wasn't necessary. I'd have just switched them. But anyway, I think at this point, if you're at 80, I'm not quite sure I'd do anything if I were you. You've already done two of the services. I'd probably wait to 100, and then you can do a filter, and that's all. Or you can do a flush again. But I like the idea of going back and forth. I like my customers to do a pan and 3 or 4 quarts, and then 40,000 or 60,000 or whatever. Then we're going to do a flush. I like bouncing back and forth just so I can see what's inside the pan. But thank you, Bob. That's a great question. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. After the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I can have a discussion with you about anything. I'm really good at, my wife says this, I said that. I'm really good at that. And sometimes both of you are right. It's just a matter of you're talking about different time frames. Like, she says this is due and you say no, it isn't. And in reality, the manual says it's at 100. So those are the kinds of things you need to be wary of. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. 40th Street and Greenway. Tom and I have been friends for 20 years. I know that he knows how to work on cars. I know he knows how to tell whether his technicians, whether the repair matches the symptom. He's been in business a long time. He's a good guy. Him and I are cut from the same piece of cloth. Sometimes he's a little ornery, and you know me. I spend most of my time in church. So if you're in 40th and Greenway, 40th Street and Greenway, anywhere up in that northeast Scottsdale area, it's the only shop I recommend up there, Blackwell Automotive. 602-508-0960. There's a lot of times that I work on cases where there's a question. I like it when the question's presented to me. Mark, can you tell us if this car was hit in the rear? Yeah, I can. Bring it to the shop. So they bring the car to the shop. Now we have the defense attorney and we have the state of Arizona attorney, the county attorney there. And obviously they want something different. So we lift the car up on the air. We take a whole bunch of pictures. And there's no real dents or dings in the rear bumper of this. So we look at it and we say, we don't see any evidence that this car's been punched in the tail end. And they said, well, we need more than that. And I said, fine, we'll pull the bumper cover off. So we take the big plastic wraparound bumper cover off, and there's nothing inside. There's no cracks. There's no crush marks. There's nothing inside. So then as we take this off, Eddie and I determine you have two shock absorbers in the back bumper of this car and many of your own cars. And these literally are shock absorbers, and that's why they're called 5-mile-an-hour bumpers. Now, think about this. We have a shaft within a shaft, and there's typically oil that's lubricated. If you have a collision on the rear bumper, that piston, that shock absorber, is going to be shoved backwards, and then it's going to pop back out. And when it does that, it cleans all the dust and the dirt off of itself so you can see a clean area and then where the dirty area comes in. So you look at that and you go, oh, no question, it's been hitting tail end, you know, within the last month. But in this case, neither side had that clear area of that shock absorber, and both sides had years and years of grease and dirt there. So there's nothing on the cover, there's nothing on the inside of the cover, nothing on the outside of the cover, and there's nothing on the two bumper, or on the two 5-mile-an-hour shock absorbers that hold the bumper in place. So the question is we can find no reason to suggest or to defend that this car has been hit in the back end. That's kind of what we do. Now, there's times that we give bad news. We had a car in there and they said, you know, we need to know if this car has good brakes. So we check it out and lo and behold, it's got a major brake problem. And it's got a major brake problem that was intermittent. And so a lot of people think, okay, well, it's bad now, but it's better now. So they continue to drive it. It's not unusual. It's just kind of human nature. So if it happens and it stays there, most people get their brakes checked. But if it only happens on every other Thursday or, you know, Thursday and then a week later, 10 days later, most people will say, well, I'll wait till I have to deal with that. So those are the kinds of questions that we typically, and I'm not just one. One other thing, you can't really lie about a car accident anymore because of the black box data. The black box data tells you everything you need to know. We know how fast you're going. We know, I'm teasing you, we know what radio station you're listening to. We know if your seatbelt's on. We know that just before, oh, and your throttle is 82% and your speed 70 miles an hour and a 45 mile an hour. Then all of a sudden we see your foot come off the throttle and hit the brake. Then 7/10 of a second later we see the collision and we see the airbag deploy. And then we see your car goes this way and this way, and we kind of can put all that together. Now, I can't do it like the accident recon guys do, but they can determine what position the two cars were at, what their speed is. But if there's black boxes in both of them, I mean, you're going along at 70 miles an hour, you hit the car, and in the blink of an eye, you go from 70 to 22. You know, it's pretty easy to figure that all out when you're looking at the crash data. So my suggestion is if you're going to sit there and throw crap on the wall to the police, it's a bad idea. Just shut your mouth and don't answer any questions. That's the easiest thing. We've got a caller. Who might that be?
That would be Wayne.
Wayne, good morning.
Good morning. First, let me compliment you for the work you do in, you know, seeking truth when it's sports situations.
Thank
you. We got far too many lawyers in the world. Greed is, you know, a part of human nature. So whether it's you, me, or anyone else, we tend to shade the truth too many times. So thank you for that work. Then I was going to comment on the last caller and the transmission issues and say to you that I drive about 30,000 miles a year, and my wife drives about 15, and that's spread over three vehicles. But change vehicles about every 3 years, and I buy vehicles at 100,000 miles because they're cheap. I drive them 100 or so thousand miles, and then I get rid of them, and I haven't had a transmission problem in 15 years. But I change the fluid and drop the pan and the filter every 45, 50,000 miles and try to take care of them. And Detroit or whoever is building really good products these days, but they all require service, and that's a part of the cost of driving the vehicle.
2 minutes.
And I drive vehicles for literally 100,000 miles, which is the second 100,000 miles. It costs me 10 to 12 cents a mile, and that's it.
Well, and I'm going to agree with you.
Forever.
And it has everything to do with a couple things. First of all, we now have more than three gears, so we can spread the load over five or six. Second of all, our fluids are so much more superior to the cars of yesteryear. And then third, you're doing everything right. I would, if you would have asked me, I would have said, do it at 50. You're going to keep it at 100, do it at 50. And keep an eye. Now, if you buy it at 100 and the fluid's brown and smells a little stinky, then I say, okay, let's do it there. Then let's do, you know, the pan and stuff, and then let's do the flush next time. But you're absolutely right in this respect. We used to see transmissions go out before 100. It was, I go back to 1971, and I was a kid pumping gas at the Broadway Shell gas station in Tempe, Broadway and Priest. The idea is that we used to see transmissions all the time come in on a tow truck, and they didn't. You could rev them up, and you could do whatever you wanted. The only way you'd get it to move is push it. So you're right.
That's right.
We see transmissions and engines go way past 200, but here's the deal. If you're going to overheat them, you're going to run them low on oil, that's going to be the death knell. So most of those kinds of things that we see have been run low on oil or overheated, and I'm talking in a bad way. So if you don't overheat it and if you don't run it low on oil, then you can expect both the transmission and the engine to go probably 250,000, 300,000 miles. But thank you very much for that, Wayne. 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday between 10 and noon. We're talking about your cars. Not my cars, but your cars. We'll be back in just 3 minutes. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. If you'd like to join us, it's 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we're talking about cars here. And if you have a car question about maintenance, or if you and your wife have two different ideas on what kind of a new car you have, or there's just lots of opportunity to talk about those kinds of things, and you're always welcome to do that. So one other thing that's kind of important when it comes to cars is understanding the maintenance of your car. And I'm going to tell you what I always tell you. There's no one maintenance for everybody. Look in your owner's manual. It's not uncommon for us to find men that come in and they change their transmission oil every 30,000 miles, and they have a synthetic that's a quality oil, and it's got a 100,000 mile service interval. So unless you're towing a boat, unless you're drag racing on Saturday nights, whatever the reason, if you treat your transmission normally and the manual says 100, then you do 100. That's what you should do. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. It's also kind of important to understand that there's a lot of misinformation out there with respect to intervals, and so you might, and folks, I'm being even here. Dealers, independent shops like my own, chain stores, traveling mechanics, we all have a bad habit of creating a need that's not there. So you need to be familiar with your owner's manual, or here's a great question. You're told by your shop when you pick up the car that, you know, you need a we need to flush your antenna motor, we need to change your windshield wiper fluid, we need to flush this, and we need to clean your injectors, and all this stuff. So you excuse yourself and go out to your car or say, where is my car? And it's probably parked out front or something. Say, well, pull my car up front real quick. And then you hand them the owner's manual and you say, show me, please, where it calls for that. That is a cut your that person off at the knees, and you're going to hear babbling like you've never heard before. And then they're going to come up with this idea that your manual wasn't written for Arizona. And then you say this, you know what, give me a business card, please. And why don't you order me an Arizona manual and then call me when it comes in, please. I insist, because there's no such thing as an Arizona manual. There never has been and there never will be. That manual's written for every place that car might go, whether it's Canada, Alaska, the Virgin Islands, anywhere in the United States, Mexico, whatever. The manual is the same for everywhere. Minnesota, what are they, 20 below, 30 below, and Arizona, north of 100, easy, during the summer, most of the days. So it's really, really important. And then the last thing for self-defense for car expense is this. You say, what symptom are you going to fix by flushing my gas tank? What do I have now? And you're going to hear more babbling. Now, part of the reason in certain environments is you're going to be talking to a service rider. And the service rider is just a parrot from what he's been told by the service manager or the technician. So they're not going to really be able to answer your question. But it's okay if you say, I want you to bring somebody up here to answer the question. What symptoms do I have? And then you're going to see them change and say, oh, well, it's in your owner's manual that you have to do it. I want to tell you something. There's nothing in your owner's manual. If you have an owner's manual that says to flush the fuel tank, I'll give you $100. I'll give you $100. It can't be an ink. You can't write it in there. But literally, not too long ago, a friend of mine sent me this document, and they had taken their car into to a repair shop, and they told him that your people in your mileage range are often due for an injector flush and a flush of the fuel tank. And so we just want you to know that other people have benefited from this. So, and when you get a chance, you know, bring it back and let's flush your fuel tank and let's flush your injectors. Well, first of all, I've never flushed a fuel tank, and I've been in this business, nor have I seen anybody or heard of anybody flushing a fuel tank unless there's a contamination issue. But nobody's ever flushed a fuel tank to fix symptoms. It just doesn't happen unless there's contamination. That's a different story. Number two, fuel injectors today. I want to tell you something. I've never flushed fuel injectors on any car I own. We have 30-some-odd cars in our rental fleet, in our staff, in our management team, all kinds. We have vans that take people home. We have never flushed fuel injectors on anything we've ever owned. Because if you have an engine miss, it's typically something else. It's a vacuum leak or something like that. If you have a problem where your idle's rolling, almost always it's something else. And when I say almost always, 90% of the time it's something else. So be wary of the word flush, because behind the wall, it's called flushing your wallet. And we'll flush your wallet if you let us. And I say we'll, I'm talking about the auto repair industry. So beware, beware. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to run all the way to 58, which means we'll come back at about 43. So we got long stretch to go. So unless you want to hear me snoring, you give us a call, 602-508-0960. 508-0960. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Jerry, I owe you an apology. I had written your name down, but I didn't have communication with Gil, who's flying the airplane. It's my fault because I had turned down my headset. So when I took the break, I realized I couldn't talk to him. And he said, you missed Jerry. And Jerry evidently had something else to do. So, Jerry, I'm sorry. If you want to call back, Gil's got my headphone, or I have my headphones turned on, and Gil's ready to yell at me. So, automatic transmission exchange is a good place, and here's why. Phil's been around since 1968. So he started with the transmissions that just had vacuum modulators, and they had you shifted them from one gear to the other, and that's about it. Today we have computerized transmissions, and everything we do, we open solenoids and close solenoids electronically to make it do what we're supposed to do. So they're pretty sophisticated. As you can imagine, we had, you know, people carrying around a book with their calendar on it, and then all of a sudden we now have iPhones with our whole life in them. So that's how transmissions have been. So if you have a transmission problem, I'd like to suggest that you stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange. They're on 40th Street in Washington, and they're a good place to go. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Here's another story for you, and it's just as true can be. You remember when Volkswagen got caught with their pants down over vehicle emissions, and they lied about something about vehicle emissions and the software? Well, Chrysler and Dodge got the same thing. So they had a situation where their software didn't give the level of low emissions as they said it would, and listen to this, and the computer would lose sight of the coolant sensor. So if the coolant sensor, if the computer lost sight of the coolant sensor, it would assume it was cold, so it would open up the fuel delivery. Obviously, that created more emissions. So Chrysler comes out with a software, and this is going to put the car in the square box it belongs. But it doesn't. So I had a case not too long ago where the truck had been taken to a dealer, and as the dealer should, they're supposed to look and see if you have any recalls or campaigns or anything that needs to be done, and they do it. They usually don't ask you about recalls. And most people say, go ahead. I know I do. So this truck ran perfectly before, and it went into a dealer, and they reflashed it with this new software. I got involved right after that because the truck had some unbelievable symptoms that it had never had before. Number one, you drive down the road, and this is a turbocharged diesel, so when you touch the gas on this son of a gun, it should raise up the front wheels and take off. They do. That's what they're supposed to do. This one, you push on the gas, here's the motor. You push on the gas, you could put it to the floor. That's all. It's called turbo lag. It's like you hit the gas to go, and 10 seconds later, the car rears up and goes. So you don't have any turbo. It's a turbo. Now, you're driving on the freeway, and all of a sudden, the temperature gauge is at half. Now, keep in mind, I said the temperature gauge is part of the recall. The temperature gauge is at half. All of a sudden, for no reason, it goes to full hot. And when it does, the computer sees that and says, oh, I'm not going to let Mark drive this thing full hot. I'm going to preserve the engine and the transmission. I'm going to do my best to overcome what he's doing to abuse this car. And the computer puts the truck into limp mode. Limp mode means you're going to be going 25 miles an hour. And if you're on the freeway like I was, that means you better pull off to the right, get in the emergency lane, turn on your hazards, and you know for the next 3 miles you're going to go 25 miles an hour until you get to the top of the hill. And that's dangerous. I don't care who you are. That's scary. So this truck, it was fine before the recall, and now it has all of this, and it's three. Overheat for no reason, including the gauge, but there is no overheat. There's no puking of coolant on the water. There's no gurgling. There's no steam. We're not overcoming the radiator cap and pushing a bunch of hot water into the coolant. There's nothing. And when I drove this truck, I took a temperature gun, and when the needle swung to red, I pulled off. I gunned the top hose. We're at 230. I gunned the bottom hose. We're about 200. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what we want to see. We want to see hot water coming in, and we want to see cooler water going out. So there's nothing. So I call around, and the software recall is called VO7. I think it's VO7. So I call around to two friends of mine in the Dodge arena, and they said, Mark, there's no fix. And I said, do you have any idea when there's going to be a fix? No, nope, no idea. What do you mean? There's no fix, Mark. How many cars are out there like this? Lots of them, Mark. I go, you're kidding. They go, nope. Fiat will call us 2 hours before they release the update. We don't get a week or a month. We don't get anything. So you got a lot of cars out there with the Ecotec diesels that are just undrivable? Yep. What do you tell them? We don't tell them nothing. Can they trade the truck in? No, because we know it doesn't run. And it's not the dealer's fault. This is Chrysler's fault. And this is the worst I've ever seen anything happen. And if you get on the net and you Google EcoDiesel, turbo lag, overheat, limp mode. Limp mode means this. The computer sees something and it takes your ability to drive your car. So if you're overheating the car, it slows you down. It turns on the electric fan. He tries to overcome. It's a program. And virtually every car in the last 4 or 5 years has limp mode. It'll take the throttle away from you. It doesn't take your brakes away from you, but it says, Mark, you're going too fast. We're not going to let you go 120 miles an hour in your VW Jetta. So that's what limp mode's all about. This is still going on. I have a plan, though. I'm going to try to fix this lady's truck. I'm going to drive up to Holbrook this afternoon. I've got a plan. First thing I'm going to do is disconnect the coolant sensor and see if it changes the symptoms of overheat, computer lag, and limp mode. The second thing I'm going to do is try something that I think will work, but I don't know. But I'll know in an hour. So I'm going to go up there, put it in, drive it for an hour, bring it back, and see if her truck is okay. I'll let you know what that is. Who we got on the phone?
We have Jim.
Jim, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. Hey, I just had something on newer cars that I've told my friends. It's like if something weird happens with your car anymore, it's like I think the first thing to check is the silly battery. I had, let's see, the latest one was my daughter, a 2017 Corolla, that the panic button would just start hitting off and on. They couldn't figure it out. Dealer didn't know. And for whatever reason, he took it in over to O'Reilly's. They checked the battery and said, oh, your battery's bad. Put in a new battery. Problem went away. And then the weirdest one was we had a 2016 Equinox, and we were parked watching fireworks. I put it in a drive. Nothing. It would not, car wouldn't move, shut it off, car started up, put it back in the drive, nothing. And then I said, let's just sit for half hour. And then finally thankfully I was close enough to home. I was able to drive it home because it finally went into gear. Called up the dealer. They sent a tow truck over. The driver goes, oh, no, it goes into gear. There's nothing wrong with it. And I said, my wife drives this car. I want it checked. And they called up and said, oh, it was your battery and something with capacitors or something that...
Okay, I can explain all that.
Wouldn't let it go into...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But here's the problem from an experienced set of ears. The car starts and runs fine, but the battery fixes the problem. That's tough for me to... I'm not going to argue with success. Don't misunderstand. That's just tough because when you crank the starter over and the engine over, it can go down to 9.6, and that's to turn the motor over. But it's going to bounce right back up to 12, 12.5. Now, a fully charged battery is 13 volts, and the alternator better give us a volt past that. So a volt past the 12. So if the alternator is putting out 13 volts, bingo. But an alternator can put out 13 to 15 volts. So if you got enough to start it, why do we have a fob problem? If it's good enough to start it, why do we have an electrical problem where we can't get the transmission to shift? There's typically more to the story, but let me tell you about the capacitor. In your computer, you can shut it off and turn it on. And that's what you do when you take the negative or the positive cable off the battery, set it to the side, go in and watch the football game, come back out. That's just a boot. We're just doing the same as you do, turning your computer off and turning it on. When you have a capacitor, when you do a capacitor, you pull both cables off, you hold them in your hands, and you touch the cable ends to one another. Not the battery terminals, the cable ends, you touch them to one another. That discharges all the capacitors, and that's the one that fixes most of the craziness about electrical systems. So I don't know what happened on your car. I agree with you. There are some really weird electrical problems. You get in, you start the car, the air conditioning's on. You didn't even touch it. That's not the way you left it. Then 3 or 4 minutes later, it goes to full hot and smokes you. And then the driver's windows goes up and down without anybody touching it. These are problems that we see. And sometimes, like you said, Jim, you just got to wait until somebody figures out how to fix it. Because a lot of times this is something that's brand new, and everybody's working on it, but nobody's come up with a fix, and no one comes up with a cause. So we can't do a fix till we know the cause. But I can't tell you how many cars you pull the negative cable off, let it sit there for an hour or two, put the negative cable back in, and 30% of the times whatever electrical system you were chasing is gone. Now, if you take the cables off and touch the cable ends together to discharge the capacitor in the computers, that fixes about 40% to 50% of the problems that are weird electrical problems, like I turn on the radio and my wipers flap. So I agree with you 100%. You can't argue with success, but a battery typically isn't the problem, because if it starts and runs and your headlights come on and you can use the wipers, everything's working like it should. So sometimes that reboot is what it needs, and it's no different than the one on your desk. Anyway, thank you for that. Thank you very much. Who's next, Gil?
We have Danny.
Danny or Danny?
Danny.
Danny, good morning.
How do you do?
Good.
I have a 2.4 Ecotec LE5. The motor's out of a Malibu, like a 08 Malibu.
Okay.
And it's in an airboat. And I'll just give you a short synopsis. The motor would go to 3200 and go into a crazy mode. It would go crazy mode. It would run to 3200. So I narrowed it down to, if I unhooked the intake valve, variable valve solenoid, the motor would run pretty good, about 500 off its potential.
So the 500 then, RPM different, it makes a difference.
Oh yeah. Okay. I mean, because it should run. I end up swapping the motors, and it ran up. I had it propped, you know, a pitched prop on an airboat to run 5,800 RPM.
Okay.
At maximum load. So what I'm trying to figure out is what is wrong with the motor I pulled out in the, is it the cam phaser? Is it oil pressure problem? I've just never, because I put another motor in, it worked fine.
Okay. Well, the answer to your question is no one's going to know until they go in there and look at it. You've got to.
Well,
you know, that's all I can tell you is.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. I'm not.
I can't.
I just thought maybe you would give me a little enlightenment, because we've put it on, you know, the Sun machines or the Snap-on machines that tell you what's going on, and I've had some pretty smart guys go, we have no idea what is wrong with this particular.
If that's the case, and you have no idea, then you have to wait till it gets worse and easier to find and hope whatever's wrong fails. But we don't have big scopes anymore. We have little handheld devices that we plug in underneath the dash, and you have to understand what the numbers mean. So when I see a 1.1 and I expect to see a 4.5, then I need to make it look, and I need to work on it till it says 4.5. So now I say, okay, I like that 4.5. Or the O2 sensor's screaming out 1.1, and it's got a lean code in it, but I got to plug fuel filter. So I know that the two of them are together. So that's kind of how it is. But swapping the motor, the problem left with that old motor, and you should be grateful for that. But I don't know. Someone's going to have to go in and answer all the questions, the cam phasers, oil pressure, all that stuff. That's going to have to happen. Action Auto Repair is up at I-17 in Deer Valley. It's a good place to go. Tom's been around a long time, since 1983, and I've known him since the early 80s. His staff are ASE Master Certified Technicians. They do a good job. They give you an estimate, and they're at the number or below the number. And you can always say to them, is this a guess or a fix? And they'll squint at you and say, it's a fix. And then if they say, no, it's not a fix, you say to any shop, well, whose money are we guessing with, yours or mine? But you don't have to worry about that. Action Auto, he knows how to handle that. And he knows that fixing is what we're all about. Diagnosing, fixing, and then verify your situation is gone. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're wide open. Welcome back, everybody. 36 minutes after the hour. Oh, 4 minutes after the top of the hour. I'm looking at the seconds again. I'm sorry about that. Nevertheless, 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'm going to go straight to John because he's been waiting. And, John, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I sure enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I have an option. Well, I think it might be an option. I'm an old computer guy, in the computer world, and often in the Windows world, anytime you get an upgrade, it's a downgrade. So back to the Chrysler Dodge Turbo Diesel, the Turbo Lag. You had suggested or thought that it had version 7 software in the firmware. Is there any way you could get the new or the old firmware, the binary, and then reload that back into the computer and get back to the working firmware program before this whole debacle started?
You are exactly right. That is a question that few nerds would come only the nerds would come up with, and so I'm calling you a nerd. But you're exactly right, and that's what I said. I said to them, "This is."
And get this version 7 software from Chrysler. You may have to pull it off an old working turbo D
Nope. I tried to buy a wrecking yard one, but the VIN's burned in it, so I can't put it in this truck. There's so many road hazards here, so many roadblocks here. I tried everything. I put a different coolant sensor in it. I disconnected the coolant sensor because this is a common problem. Is it goes full hot and then it goes into limp mode. So I thought if I can make it not go full hot. I built a resistor to put in there after I determined what normal heat is. And so I put the resistor in the plug. And I said, I'm going to feed you a good value. Nothing. So I'll tell you a secret. I'm going to drive up to Holbrook today. And you know what a programmer is?
Oh yeah,
I'm taking a programmer with me, and I'm gonna put some auxiliary performance software in that truck. So
good.
I'm taking a whole bunch of sensors, feeding them into a completely new PCM, and that PCM will go right through the existing PCM because the data's bad. I mean, the data's been changed for the good.
Nice.
So I think, and I'll let you know how I did, I'm thinking I'm going to be 100% correct, and I can hardly wait to get up there, and it'll take me about 30 minutes to plumb this in. I'm going to give her the keys, and I say, I'm going to sit right here, and I want you to take that on 40, and I want you to just blow its guts out and see if it goes in limp mode. Call me if it does, and if it doesn't, I want you to go down 10 miles. I want you to turn around, come down, and I want you to just drive it like you stole it. And if she comes back and she's got a big smile. I hit the home run.
This is an upgrade chip from a third-party manufacturer?
Yes. Yes.
Nice. And that would typically set you back, what, $300 to $800?
Yes, that's exactly right. I paid. I'm not going to tell you how much I paid for it, because what I paid for it is not what you're going to pay for it. But, yes, $300 to $800 is a perfect number. Yes.
Nice. You're not going to wait around for fiat, because you'll be sitting there until hell freezes over.
You know, first of all, I'm not charging the insurance company a dime. I already billed them. And I'm not charging her a dime. And I told her, if this doesn't work, I'll take it back out. And you're going to wait for fiat. But I feel pretty comfortable. But this is something, you know, I still need to get to heaven. And when he stands there, he meets me at the gate, and he's got his hands on his hips. I know what he's thinking, and he knows a lot about me. So I'm, in my own personal way, I figure that maybe I can do a little bit more good than bad. Nevertheless, I know the difference between right and wrong, and I can do this, and my wife's going to go with me to Holbrook, and we're going to stop and see some people we know. So, yes. But you ask a wonderful question.
You have this third-party manufacturer that's going to support you on this. That's the beauty.
And you're right. I've already talked to them. They said that we've had some success with this. They said, don't forget to do this, this, and this. And I said, I got your directions, buddy. If there's one thing I know what to do, it's follow direction. I am taking up a 3/16 bit, a 9/16 bit. I'm bringing some picks in order to get the clips out of it. I'm bringing a 5/16 swivel socket with the long extension and a small. I have got everything loaded up. And I'm going to pull both battery cables, discharge the capacitors. I'm going to make sure my stuff's done. I'm going to turn my key on. I'm going to look for a check engine light because I really don't want a check engine light. And that's why I'm going to have her drive it 20 miles. So I'll let you know next week whether, or you can send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. But you are exactly right. When I first started this, it was one of my texts that said, why don't we just unwind the software? And so I called a couple of friends of mine that are in a position of power at the Dodge and Chrysler's dealerships, and they smiled and they said, Mark, we've already asked to do that, but when you upgrade it, it destroys their old version, and we don't have the old version anymore, so when we download the new version, it supersedes the old one. So I think that's kind of a silly idea, but this is the first time in my life I've ever heard of that. So it is what it is.
I think you're on the right track.
I'll let you know. If I hit a home run, you'll be able to hear me scream from Holbrook.
I'll listen to you next week.
All right. Thank you, John. Thank you very much. Computer, as much as I used to make fun of them, they understand that that computer can do something that we can't. When I first bought software to look at the black box on a car, the very first car I looked at was my middle daughter's, who rear-ended somebody. And she says, Dad, I hit the brakes and they didn't work and I tried to swerve and all that kind of stuff. So I download the black box and I'm looking at it. Her foot's on the throttle 31% all the way to the point of impact. The steering wheel never moved and she never hit the brakes, which means she was looking at her phone or she was looking at something else. So, and I'll give you another example. I know I got a caller, but let me just give you another example. When we talk about numbers, you have to know what the numbers is, okay? Map sensor, manifold absolute pressure. What's a good number? 6 or 18? And which one do we want to see, and what does 6 represent, and what does 18 represent? Mass airflow sensor, 6 or 30? What does 6 mean? What does 30 mean? The temperature sender, 0.3. What does that mean? What does 0.1 and 0.5 mean? What does that mean? When you look at the data, you better know the answer. The manifold absolute pressure. Here's the deal. The truck or the car is idling. It's a gas motor. It's idling. It's got 18 inches of vacuum. When you stuff the throttle to the floor, the vacuum goes to zero. So that tells me all I need to know. And if I have a map sensor code, when I'm looking at idle and it's not 18 inches, and I look at the hose and the hose is split. So that explains why we're running rich. That explains why there's black smoke. That explains why the oil's contaminated. Put in a new piece of hose. Bingo. 18 and idle. Wide open throttle. 0, 2, 3, 4. I'm done. But you can replace the map sensor, and you can wave all kinds of magic wands, and you can replace everything underneath the hood. But a gray-haired guy like me and a lot of the young bucks, we could have told you right then what was the matter with it. It wouldn't have taken us 30 minutes to figure that out. And for a piece of 12-inch vacuum hose, I mean, it's one of those things where it takes $75, $80 to find it, and it's a dollar to fix it. That's all there is to it. Who have you got next?
We have Greg.
Greg, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes. Hi, Mark. I have a question for you. I have a 70 Dodge, and I actually just got it back from a transmission shop yesterday. My concern with it was leaking. It's been leaking fluid. And, you know, I explained to them that it looks like it's coming out of the front seal up by the torque converter. I mean, because I have a catch pan under it, and, you know, it's been coming out for a while. So anyway, I made an appointment. I bring it there, you know, a week and a half after I made the appointment. And basically, it sits there for 3 days, and then I get a call yesterday, and they say, oh, it's all done. It's all done, and they found a couple leaks, and he said it was overfull by 2 quarts. Originally, he said 1.5. When I got there, he said 2. But I actually had changed the transmission fluid in it twice, because originally I thought it was the transmission pan leaking, and long story short, I bought one of those aluminum pans because they're a lot sturdier, and, you know, I put that up. So, obviously, I had to, you know, put the fluid back.
This is really easy to fix.
Well, maybe for you.
Well, I can name 50 other shops that this is really easy to fix. So,
okay. If
you don't have any dye, you aren't going to fix it. If you don't know how to make dye circulate the system, you're not going to fix it. You're probably going to have to buy a blue light and dye, and that'll cost more than the repair. And I don't know that you're sure that this can't be engine oil or transmission fluid.
2 minutes.
it's 100% transmission fluid.
And how do you know that?
Because it's leaking out from the torque converter
strike
cover
two.
Plate, and it's the
strike
minute,
two.
It's the color.
Strike two.
Okay.
Strike two.
Okay.
Okay.
It's the color of transmission fluid.
Okay.
It's red.
All right. Well, you can do all that you want. What I'm trying to suggest to you is we can leak off the back of the intake manifold. We can leak at the rear seal. We can leak at the cam plug. We can leak at the front of the pan. We can have some problem where the transmission fluid is foaming and coming out the dipstick tube, all of that. So you have two choices. You can either get some help, a different pair of eyes, or you can continue to try to direct the repair or continue to have people guess. You can do all that. But, I mean, it's pretty simple. You put dye in the tranny fluid, if you think you're right. You go drive it for 4 or 5 hours or 3 hours, and then you bring it in, you put it on the rack, you get your blue light, you put your funky glasses on, and the trail of dye will lead you directly to where it is. But if it's in the bell housing, you have to take the transmission out. Is it the front seal? Is it the front cover seal? Now, there's three seals in the front of a transmission, so you got to know which one it is. So you have to go through all those gyrations, but if you got an oil pan that's leaking, then it starts from there and works its way down and goes backwards. So when you pull the dust cover off and you shine your light up there, there's no dye. You got all this going on. And I want to tell you something. I've got guys that have worked for me for 30 years that every once in a while will misinterpret power steering fluid, coolant, and engine oil and gear oil. So when everybody's sure that it's this, sometimes it isn't. I'm just suggesting that. So thank you, Greg. I don't know what else to tell you, but you say that you changed the fluid, but he says it's a quart and a half over, but he didn't fix the leak. So his quart and a half, 2 quarts over, kind of goes out the window because he didn't fix the leak. The real question is what did he do? And we never got there. But anyway, I got to run. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me talk real quick about Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob's been around since Jesus was a baby. Bob was around when they had horses in front of carriages. Bob knows cars because he came in at the beginning, and he's still there today. He also has Jeremy, who's there, who's a master tech in all categories. And I've never met one like that before. And this young buck knows cars like nobody I've ever seen. So between the two of them, the old gray-haired guy and the young buck, you've got everything you want. So if you have a problem with a car nobody else can fix, then Larry Harker's Auto. But by the way, they also do oil changes and cooling system flushes and brakes and tires and all that other stuff. But if you've got one of those cars where you turn on a certain radio station and the passenger side window drops, then Larry Harker's would be a good place if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School. 18 minutes after the hour, we'll be back. Minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We were talking about numbers and stuff. Just let me give you another example. On many of the sensors on your computer car, the numbers are opposite. Where the coolant sensor may say, I'm in the middle, that means it's on the lower end of the scale or on the upper end of the scale. Map sensors are the same way. They have a top and a bottom and a middle, so you have three different positions, and you have to know what each one of those means. So it's just a matter of understanding the numbers. And so the only way you're going to fix it is the numbers. Most of the time, with the exception of one sensor, low is lean and high is rich. With the exception of one sensor. Low is lean, high is rich. So a low number will be a lean condition that it's either creating because of a fault signal, or you got a big vacuum leak or something like that. EGR is sticking open. On the top side, rich, we've got a rich condition because we have a fuel pressure regulator that's out. Now, the oxygen sensor screaming rich. Everybody replaces the oxygen sensor, but the fuel pressure regulator is the problem. That's the kind of stuff we need. And there's no such thing as hooking up a box to your car and having the box tell you what's wrong with it. That's not going to happen. It's like checking your blood pressure and then telling you that your right eardrum's blown. There's no relationship, but nobody can do it with just a box. Let's go to the phones, and thank you for calling. We have open line, 602-508-0960. Mike, you're up.
Good morning, Mark. I've got a question on a 2003 Chevy Trailblazer. When you go to accelerate on it, it just sounds like it's a lot of revving and no moving. And we've got a lot of diagnostic and a lot of repairs done, and I'm just wondering, is there something I need to be looking at besides the catalytic converter?
Well, no, that's not a catalytic converter symptom. So I don't know. If you're giving it a lot of gas and it seems to be slipping, I'd check the fluid in the transmission and I'd manually shift it. So I'd pull it down into low, and I'd pop it up. And then I would take control of the shift and to see if I could almost bark the tires between first and second and third. So there are some tests that you can run, but let me answer your catalytic converter. The catalytic converter, when it's bad, it's usually plugged. So you're not going to have any problem getting to 30 or 40, and sometimes 50 or 60. But you're not going to do 60, 70, 80. It's not going to happen. It's like somebody stuck a potato in the exhaust pipe. Now, there's a lot of wheezing that goes on because you've got this plugged exhaust system. So now we're going to be wheezing the engine. And when you back off the throttle, it'll die because all of a sudden we've got all this exhaust. So catalytic converter won't cause what you're describing. But I think what I would do is I would take it over I get this brain, you know what I'm talking about. Automatic transmission exchange down on 40th Street in Washington. Just have them drive it. Let's see if it's a transmission problem. The other thing you could have is you could have a fan clutch that's locked up, and that will create a shift problem in most people's mind. So make sure that the fan clutch is freewheeling when it's cold, and it's not when it's kind of locked up when you're at full temperature. So that's what I would do. What jobs, what things have you done on this so far, or is this early in the symptom time?
Well, we basically, when my wife acquired it from my mother, she put a lot of money into it and went down to Kurtz, and that was always the symptom that bugged her, and everyone's done a lot of this. The cat's been replaced because it was air-coated and the catalytic was bad and everything else, but it just seems like that problem has really never gone away.
Okay.
And,
well, the cat doesn't do what you said it does. The computer doesn't know if the cat is bad, but if we plug the exhaust, then we're going to disturb the intake and all the air up front. So we obviously need 18 inches of vacuum when the throttle blades are closed, and when we start opening up exhaust valves, instead of the exhaust going out, we got exhaust coming in. So there is no code for a catalytic converter. However, there could be a temperature code that says the front is hot and the back is cold, but you still have to check the veracity of both of those sensors because when one dies, it goes low. So if we've got a sensor in the front that says, hey, we're okay, and the sensor in the back says, no, we're not, you have to check the one in the back first before you can condemn it. So I think what you really need is to have a couple of senior guys drive the car, and first you drive it and show them what you think is wrong and then let them drive it. And then if you get two or three gray-haired guys or some young bucks to drive it and say that there's no problem, then you only have one choice. Wait till it gets worse and easier to find. But I think, I mean, if Kurt or Jeff or Eric drove that at Kurt's and they gave it the sign of the cross, then I would hop in the car with you. You could take my grandkids to Florida for Disney World if you want. I would have that much faith in those guys. What's that?
That sounds expensive.
I'm trying to.
I'm sure they'd want to hit every attraction.
No.
And then some.
No, what I'm trying to say to you is I would have so much faith in their saying it's okay that I wouldn't be scared of you breaking down. So I would say to you, if you're going to Florida, take my grandkids. That's kind of what I'm saying. But anyway, I would Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I would call up Kurt and I'd say, can I just get one of you guys to go with me? And you need to demonstrate it, and this can't be a 30-minute deal. So, you know, you have to be kind of quick, and then you have to let him drive, and you have to coach him on how to make it happen. But I want to tell you something. Eric and Jeff, I respect those two young guys like you can't believe. They have magic wands, and they understand cars like very few young bucks I know. So, and Kurt's a master, so is Eric and Jeff. So I can't say enough about them, but I think I'd give them another try. Anyway, thank you very much for your comments, Mike, and hopefully Kurtz can help you out. Greg, you're up next.
George,
I'm sorry. I spelled it wrong. George, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I want to just tell you a little experience I had with my 2001 Toyota Echo. okay?
Okay.
Earlier this year, I was driving my car, and I had changed the spark plugs back in November and the air filter and all that. Then about late January, the car just started hesitating, bucking, even stalled. It even stalled at 40 miles an hour on the freeway, I mean, when I'm accelerating.
I understand.
And couldn't figure it out. I went ahead and pulled the spark plugs out. They were all black. It did have a check engine. It was shown as running rich. Something to do with the oxygen sensor. Still couldn't, you know, figure it out. So I called my son, who's a mechanic. He said, "Dad, I can't work on it, but take it over to his friends who has a shop." He takes it over there. He puts the scanners on. He can't figure it out. And I talked to people at my work, and they said, "You know, there's been a lot of rain. Maybe you got contaminated gas." So he dumps the gas, because I only had about an eighth of a thing, and puts in new fuel. He drives it for 2 days, runs good. So I take it, run it maybe 2 or 3 days, it starts doing exactly the same thing it was doing before. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to take it to the shop that Mark Salem recommends. And I took it to them, and I took it on a Friday afternoon, got it back on a Monday. They said, "You need new fuel injectors. That's all we can come out of your fuel injectors." This car has almost 300,000 miles at the time.
Okay.
So I thought, okay. So I put new fuel inject. Had my son put new fuel injectors, but he says, "Dad, I don't think that's it." But put new fuel injectors in there.
Okay. Now I only got a minute on this break. So
I'm almost done.
You got 56 seconds.
Okay. So anyway, they gave it back to me, and I rode it a couple days. It started doing exactly the same thing all over again. So my son drove it, and he thought, man, it's the throttle body sensor or something like that. So got one of those $50, put that in. Still didn't work. It's still doing the same thing. I got my brother-in-law helping me. He's a homemade self mechanic.
Okay, we have to pull the plug on this, because I'm 30 seconds away from the break, and I got to hit this one kind of hard. So what I hear basically is you got black spark plugs and you got a rich condition, and you haven't been able to fix it between you, your brother-in-law, and your son, and a shop. And now you're thinking about replacing a whole bunch of parts, which is quite different than I suggest that you do. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour clock, we're going to go to George and Michael, but Greg and Michael. I keep saying that. Greg and Michael,
George and Michael.
I've got... Which is it? I screwed it up again, didn't I? Okay. Anyway, let me tell you real quick about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're up there on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate smells like a diesel guy. Nate knows diesels like there's nobody else that I know. He really knows the Chevys and the Fords and the Dodges, and he does some of the imports as well. So they do car and gas, and they do all kinds of stuff, but what they really shine in is diesel repair. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, if you're up in that area and you've got a diesel, or if you're anywhere in the city and you've got a diesel that no one else can fix, then take it over to Nate at Strictly Diesel. What name am I supposed to call him, Gil? Because I screwed up. Huh?
George.
George. Oh, gosh. George, that's my fault. Is there an end to this story? Is it fixed?
It is fixed, and I'll tell you how it got fixed.
No. Tell me what fixed it.
What fixed it?
Yes.
Replacement of a PCV valve and a hose that's attached to the PCV valve.
Okay. All right. I'll tell you what I'm thinking, George. I'm thinking to myself, if the PC valve's defective, it's a vacuum leak. And if the hose is defective, it's a vacuum leak. But you said the spark plugs are black, and you've got indications of running rich. So I'm trying to digest that, and you're describing a repair that's a vacuum leak. But then, on the other hand here, we've got black spark plugs and a code that indicates rich. Tell me how you straighten that out.
I'll tell you. My brother-in-law, who is over, he says, "Did you check your PCV valve?" And I says, "Well, when I changed my spark plugs, I couldn't get the PCV valve. It screws into the engine. It's not one of those you pull out. So I said I was able to unscrew it, but I couldn't get it off the hose, but it rattled. So I thought, well, if it's rattling, it's okay. So I screwed it back in.
I know, but you're giving me the process. I want you to explain why a PCV valve causes a lean condition and you've got black spark plugs with a rich condition.
Because, the hose itself was so plugged up with sludge, and it looked like somebody stuck Vaseline in this hose.
Okay.
And it was from, this is like about 9-inch hose, 10-inch hose.
Okay,
longer.
Well, the PCV valve itself opens and closes, so the hypothesis kind of, I struggle with it, because the PCV valve opens and closes. So when it's closed, it's the same as having a plugged hose. And so, and if it's closed, we're sucking fumes out of the engine with the positive crankcase ventilator. So we're sucking fumes out and we're running them through the engine. So when it's plugged up, we lose those fumes, which means that we run lean and you still got a rich code and you still got black spark plugs. So time will tell. I'm glad you got it fixed. I'm glad you used all those people to help you and stuff like that. And I'm glad you finally got it fixed, but I got to go on. Michael, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Or I should say 11:30. Good morning.
I'm with you.
I have a, you can help me on a smoke problem I'm having on my 89 Ford, Bronco 2.9 liter fuel injected.
Okay.
I found a can of injector cleaner in my garage, and I decided I was washing my car one day. So I'm going to stick that in. Looks like I have over half a tank of gas. So
sure.
I stuck it in there. This was the beginning part of September. It was still hot. I had no problem. The car starts right up, runs like a top. Step on it, it goes. About a week and a half after I did that, I started up one morning, and that's when it started to get a little bit cooler. And I took off down the street, and a big glob of smoke just came out of my exhaust there. And I
what
looked
color?
Through the rearview mirror, and I said, "What the hell is that?"
What color?
And I said to myself, "Well, you put the injector cleaner in there."
What color?
Pardon?
What color smoke?
Oh, gray.
Okay.
And I think my fuel injector cleaner is probably doing a better job of cleaning the carbon out of the cylinders than is the injectors. What do you think?
No, I don't think that any of that stuff works like people said. I think change the question. Mark, do you use, gasoline treatments, or do you use magic potions in a bottle to fix cars? And the answer is no, we don't. There's a difference.
No.
Gray smoke.
No, I don't. I mean, I just use a regular Arco gas, which is good. I've had good luck with it.
No
problems.
I agree with you. There's only four companies that make gasoline: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron, and everybody else buys from them. So the idea is gray smoke is not black, because black is rich, and blue smoke is oil, and white smoke is coolant, and you got gray smoke, which is carbon. But I doubt very seriously if anything in the tank that's diluted by a pint to a half a tank of fuel is going to just all of a sudden clean the inside of your motor spotless. The real issue is throttle it up hard, see if you see the gray smoke again, and I would probably throttle it up hard, not with the intention of blowing it up, but throttle it up hard to see if you can shake the exhaust and shake the motor a little bit, take it into some high RPMs, and get away from the gray. I'll tell you, Grandma Moses brings her Honda in, and it's got a rough idle to it. And as soon as Grandma Moses leave, we get three or four guys around the car, and we see it's got 18,000 miles, and the car's 18 years old. And so we're looking at one another, and we draw straws, and Eddie wins. So Eddie goes out, and he makes a right on the freeway. He looks around. There's no policeman. There's no cars in front of him. The car's fully warmed up. He jams the throttle to the floor. He pulls it down into first gear, takes off like hell. Behind him is a smoke screen that would make James Bond proud. Gray smoke everywhere. So he gets off on the freeway, then he takes the next exit. Now this is really late at night. and so he does the same thing through three exits, and at the end of the third exit, there's no more gray smoke. Brings it back, idles like perfect. We tell her that we took a test drive, we found a vacuum leak off, we no charge it because she's a customer of ours, and we've decarbonized her motor.
Well, I was thinking of doing that. I mean, when I start up in the morning, it's chilly now, so it does it for about till the engine warms up, and then after I do my business and come back and start it up again, it usually is about 85-90% gone.
Now, this is the gray smoke that you're talking about, right? The gray smoke that you're talking about? We're doing talking about the gray smoke you're talking about? We're still talking about the gray smoke?
Long drive and just see, you know, see if I can clean it out and see what happens the next day.
That's what I would suggest you do. That's exactly what I suggest you do is just go run it. Now, here's the problem with this. Carbon doesn't occur first thing in the morning. So I'm confused now, completely confused, because the only time carbon and gray smoke should be there is on wide open throttle when you're shaking that motor and that exhaust. So in the morning, first thing, I would probably check my coolant level because it could be white, it could be gray, but that's what has to happen. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 41 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We'll be back. Forty-five minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and Bill's on the phone. We're going to get to him, and we've probably got one or two more callers we can take, 602-508-0960. Sun City is the most largest and trusted shop for complete automotive services called Auto Dynamics. Family-owned and operated since 82. They're proud of the high-quality service they provide. Chuck Nyday opened it. His son Derek now runs it, and folks, typically the second generation, including my own, are better than the first. They're smarter. Well, not smarter, but they learn more, and they're just better. As we get older, we get set in our ways, and this isn't happening at Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I'm calling about a 67 Chevrolet 327 engine that I just overhauled.
Okay.
And can you tell me about this break-in oil and zinc additive that need to go into it now?
No, we don't use zinc anymore, and that was just a bunch of crap a long time ago. Any good quality oil will be just fine, and here's the key to breaking your 327 in. First of all, make sure it's got a 180 thermostat in it, okay? Don't leave the thermostat out. Make sure that it runs between 180 and 200 degrees. That's okay. I don't want you to use any cruise control, and I want you to vary the throttle a lot. So I want a lot of mediocre acceleration and then deceleration, and then a little harder acceleration and then deceleration, and then a little less acceleration and D, because as you throttle up, you're scuffing the rings, scuffing the cylinders, and then as you back off the throttle, we're oiling everything back up. So you constantly vary your throttle for the first 1,000 miles or so, and that will be all the break-in you need. We don't put zinc in the oil anymore. There's no reason to put zinc, and there was no reason back then to put in zinc. The old days, we thought that if we put zinc, we saved the bearings, and zinc was some kind of a magic lotion that made everything right. But if I were you, I'd use a name brand oil. I'd probably break that in with a 1030, and that'll also tell you how well your oil pressure is. And I'd probably use a 1030. You could use a conventional oil. You could use a semi-synthetic or a synthetic. All of them are appropriate, and you could break in that motor with any one of the three. So do you have
If I can...
Go ahead.
If I can ask you, what about the tappet, the, what they say, the mating of the lifters?
Okay, well, the camshaft's running on the lifters, right?
Right.
Okay, so we have cars that have much more tension than your 327 does. We've got cars with springs that are twice as strong as yours, and we don't need zinc in the last 20 years of cars. So, and then you say, well, Mark, we're going to wear the lifters or wear the rocker or wear the lobes on the cam. No, Mark's going to say no. Mark doesn't see that. Now, just recently, Chevrolet big block motors have begun to eat up the camshafts, but it's a metallurgical issue. It has nothing to do with the oil, has nothing to do with the oil change intervals. We're replacing camshafts and all the roller lifters on those babies for $5,000 and $6,000 because we got a metallurgical problem. So I know that you're going to get lots of old guys to agree with you that you need zinc for where the cam runs over the lifters. And I'm telling you, we build motors all the time, and we don't do that. And we, other than the General Motors that's got the roller rockers and the cam right now, there's no other problems that we've seen in the last 10, 15 years. I've been in this business since 1972, but I've owned my own shop since 1979. And then we built our shop in 1994, so I've been around a few times. Nevertheless, when it comes to car repair, getting a popular vote is almost really expensive. 602-508-0960. You see, we've had quite a few callers that have done that. And what I think about is they spent more money guessing than any good shop would have told them what's wrong with it. And then we also have that I have black smoke, but then it's running lean. And you can't have that. If you got black smoke, it's running rich. If you got no smoke and the spark plugs are white as a sheet, then it's lean. So you learn how to read different aspects of the motor to know whether it's really running lean or real. And lean is I don't have enough fuel. For instance, it's one pint of gasoline to 18 pints of air. That's the ratio we want, so to speak. So if you've got way too much fuel and not enough air, that's rich. And if you have more air than you need and a little bit of fuel, that's lean. So that's kind of what car repair is all about. It's analyzing what you see, and it's not guessing. Trust me. If my technicians guessed like I've heard today, I'd fire them. Okay, who we got?
We have Leonard.
Leonard, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good. Better than the average bear.
Hey, can't beat that for a day after yesterday, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Hey, what I got, I've got a Ford F-250 carbureted. It's the last year of the carbureted F-250s. I'm driving it. I'm getting a little bit of a knock, like in the bottom of the motor. Sounds almost like maybe transmission, torque converter, flywheel, motor, something there. And all of a sudden, I get a metallic sound. My oil pressure drops to zero, and it stalls out. Now when I start it up, it sounds like there's no oil at all in the engine.
Okay. What does your gauge say?
I'm sorry?
What does your dash gauge say for oil pressure? Do you have a gauge, or do you just have a light?
It's got a gauge. It says zero.
Okay. So it falls down, and you've got an accompanied noise that would handshake with the gauge sitting at zero. So
correct.
I think what you need to do is pull the oil pressure switch off of it. I think it's down on the driver's side by the oil filter. I think you should put a gauge in there and run the gauge into the car, and let's see what our pressure is. But I'm thinking that you're losing oil pressure, and then the question begs to be answered is where? Now, most of the time, it's the oil pump or above the oil pump. So if you wanted to, you could overfill that dog by about 3 quarts and go drive it and see what happens. If the problem goes away, then what you've got is an air leak in the oil pan. So it's either where the oil pump drives or where the oil pump, maybe it's sucking air because the pickup assembly's fallen off. So that's the procedure I would do. Start by overfilling it 3 quarts and going after it. Try not to drive it too long if it's clattering and you're showing no oil pressure. But if you overfill it, that'll tell you whether the problem's in the oil pan or not. After that, then you really should take an oil sample down and say, what has it got? And they say it's all full of metal. At that point, fixing it's not going to do anything for you. So you're going to have to fix the problem, and it's going to be something's coming apart inside. But if the oil analysis comes clean, then it's not that, and you said something that kind of piqued my interest. You thought it was a flywheel. And yes, the flex plate will cause that problem if it's an automatic. If it's a standard, rarely do we have any noise coming out of the clutch. And it certainly doesn't sound like the engine's eating itself from the inside out. So if you have a flex plate, that could do it. That's going to typically make a bad noise when you stress the flex plate. So a lot of times you put your foot on the gas and kind of throttle it up a little bit, and you might hear the noise, or on hard acceleration you hear the noise. And if it's a flex plate, then your oil sample will be clean. So that's what I would do if I were you. Okay?
Okay, cool. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's who we got next?
We have Scott.
Scott, good morning. What can I do for you?
Well, hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good.
Hey, I have a 2008 Lincoln MKZ with 65,000 miles on it in excellent condition. I took it in for an oil change, and I got a shock when they told me how much it would cost to replace the water pump. And so I wanted to ask you, what would be a fair price to replace a pump, or if I wanted to exchange or, you know, trade my car in or sell it, what would be the best way for me to do that?
Well, what's the symptom that you need an oil or a water pump?
Well, I had liquid dripping out of the bottom and, you know, into my garage, and I took it in, and they said I needed to replace it.
Okay.
It's leaking a lot. I went to two separate repair shops.
And they both said that it's leaking from the water pump.
Yes.
Okay, well, there's a little hole down there in between the two bearings, and when one of them, the seal goes bad, then we call it the weep hole or the pee hole, and at the very bottom of the pump. If they're going to charge you parts and labor, and then they're going to flush your cooling system and put a gallon and a half of coolant in, and I don't know if they have the upper or the lower hose on there, and I don't know if the timing cover is okay, but I think your MK is a little newer than the timing cover. I would think you're going to easily be probably 150 to 250. How'd I do?
Well, with the MKZ, I think they have to take the whole engine apart because of the timing chains or something. And
wait a minute, like I thought you said the water pump was leaking.
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
Okay.
But it's like 15 hours of repair, you know, time repairing it.
Okay, I've never seen a 15-hour water pump, but you just changed subjects on me. You went to the timing chain, and yes, it's entirely possible that it's going to take a whole lot of hours to take the front of the engine apart and replace the cam gear and the crank gear and then put a new chain on it with all the guides and all the rollers and stuff. So, yes. But one doesn't have anything to do with the other. Now, you said that they said it was a water pump, but if the cover's leaking, then you need to go all the way to the timing chain to fix the cover. So the problem here is the cover leaking and that leads you to the timing chain, or is the water pump leaking and that's all you need to do? I'm confused.
Okay. So I probably should check with the reliable repair shop. Do you have a recommendation? I live in North...
Northeast?
Yeah, north, actually Cave Creek area.
Okay, I go to Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenway just north. 40th Street and okay. Greenway just north. And basically, you just say to him, Mark Salem said that I can, you know, when you're going to pressure test the cooling system to find out where it's at, when you find it, can I come out and look at it? Can you show me what you're doing? Now, if it's the cover, then there's a lot of work to get there. There's a whole lot of work to get there. So if the cover's bad, then it's an aluminum cover. We're going to have to take it off and replace everything underneath it. You wouldn't want to just do the cover. You'd want to do the chains and all that. You said you got 65K in it, but at the same time, the car is, what, 11 years old?
Right.
Okay. So I want to tell you, you can do the cover at 65K. And they can look at the chain and go, you know what? The guides are not worn. The tensioner's good. The chain is good. The gears aren't showing anything. What do you want to do, Scott? And you go, what would you do? And say, well, if this was your mother's car, what would you do? I probably wouldn't put a chain and gears in it. Good. That's what I want to do. And that's what I have. But tell Tom Blackwell that Mark Salem said he couldn't fix a car with both hands, and if I spotted him the owner's manual. I'm not telling you to say that for any other reason than he knows that I referred you. I'm not going to make a dime on your repair. I wouldn't accept money for that, but he's a good guy in your location, and I'm quite sure he can answer your question. What's leaking? How much is it going to cost? And what parts am I going to need to fix the leak? And I think, but trading it in, they're going to find that, and they're going to ding you for the amount anyway, so it's not going to make any difference if you trade it in or not. Somebody's going to find that. 602-50-mark@marksalem.com. That's my email address if you have a car question. mark@marksalem.com. Remember, when you're told you need something, pull out your owner's manual and hand it to them and say, show me. If they say that you need some work, you say, what symptom are you going to fix with this suggested repair? That's how it works. Self-defense for car expense. MarkSalem.com. We'll be back next Saturday.